The Cycling Podcast presents Life in the Peloton. Hi, I'm Mitch Stocker, and welcome to another episode of Life in the Peloton. This is a good one. Now we're getting into the real good stuff. Mike Woods. Now, I sat down with Woodsy just after the Vuelta and just after his epic win on that hilltop finish coming into the finish of that Vuelta. We almost missed our train, and that's probably half of the story too, but it just created this amazing bond between us. This 3-week trip on the road, almost missing our train, realizing we got it, sitting back and just discussing 3 weeks on the road, the highs and lows. It's an amazing podcast. This is one of my favorite ones. Such a great guy. I really hope you enjoy listening to this one. Coming up at the end of the week, 29th of January, we've got our first official release, the 2020 first Life in the Peloton podcast presented by the Cycling Podcast, Jimmy Whelan. So until then, sit back and enjoy this one. Mike Woods.
On the train on our way back from Madrid, the Vuelta is over. I'm sitting here with Mike Woods. It's a pretty blissful moment, I have to admit. I love being on the train. The Vuelta's in the legs. Good times ahead. We're recording a pod, so the first thing I want to talk to you about, though, we got to go back to the stage win, because personally for me, that was, if not one of the best moments of this year's Vuelta, and I had nothing to do with it. You were in the break early from the day, and then I was dropped and I got to hear it on the radio, and it was just, I connected with it so much and I felt it, and it's been one of the victories that I've had one of the most biggest connections to, weirdly, because it wasn't like a lead out or something. I don't know, I really felt that day. So what I want to talk to you about in that was just run me through the day quickly, and then let's get into that last kilometer.
By the way, I disagree that you had nothing to do with it. No, you're an exceptional team captain at this race. I have a lot of fun racing with you, man. It's great.
Thanks.
And it makes a difference in my performance. I don't operate great when I'm not having a good time. And when I'm having a good time, I race a lot better. When I'm having fun, I'm just more relaxed. And you really create a great atmosphere for that. One of the coolest parts about that day was actually coming off, getting on the bus, catching up to you guys, giving you a big hug, man.
Yeah, it was good.
It was nice.
I'm glad you got back on the bus that day.
Yeah. But to take you through the day, it started off awesome. That was one of my favorite starts to a race, because we woke up in Bilbao. I had a coffee out on the patio, right by this tributary river that goes into the ocean. And there's this really cool bridge that was designed by Eiffel, from what I'm told, that had these cables that connected, kind of like a giant gondola. And we
sat there. What was that bridge called? Do you know what the style of bridge was?
Cause it's only like, I've never seen anything like
five
that.
Five or six in the world, I heard.
Yeah, it seems highly inefficient. Yeah. It's cool, super cool. But actually, I would never, as an urban planner, be like, this is a good idea. This is the bridge I want to build. This is gonna keep the city running. It's actually one of the slowest forms of transportation. But anyways, we got on this thing in order to get across the river, and then drove 2K to the start.
No other teams did it either.
No other teams did it. We actually even paid, which it was 40 cents to cross. Got some great photos from it. And then on the bus, Juanma gave me the green light to go for the break.
Let's say our sports director.
Yeah, and Juanma wanted me with Rigo quite a bit this race, and the opportunities he did give me, I ended up in breaks that didn't go to the line, and so I really felt like this was one of my last chances to have the break actually go to the line. And the way my form was coming, I came into the race with pretty low expectations, just because I came off a run of antibiotics, came off with not going great. I thought maybe I'll just build form for world championships and anything else will be gravy. And then on that day, I just felt really good. Mm. It's rare when I start a bike race where I actually think I actually can win today. And I started.
Did you?
Yeah, I started and I talked to Ellie on the phone. I was like, I think I can win today. Mm. It's also the Basque Country vibe. Like, I love racing there. I've always had good races in the Basque Country. The terrain really suits me.
And the just.
And I actually draw a lot of inspiration from the fans.
They just. They're inspiring, aren't they?
They're the best.
Yeah.
Like, we went through, not even for the finish, we went through several towns. Once I managed to get in the break, we were going through several towns, and it was deafening how many people, like, not just intermediate points in the race, not near the end. Huge crowds. And
let alone on the final climb.
Yeah, and normally for me, I have focus issues, and when I'm riding on a flat road that's super wide, and I have 50K to deal with that, I sit there and I start doing mental downward spirals of thinking, oh, I don't feel that good, or
I think we all, well, I don't know if we all have that, but I definitely have that too.
Yeah, whereas I'm like a dog, like I'm like a dog, I get so excited by the environment, and when I'm not just always looking up the road and wondering how many Ks I have left, when I'm not always looking down my Garmin, I operate so much better. And that was a course where it was constantly twisting, turning, and so I was getting like just excited about being on the course that it was on. I was having fun racing my bike, getting super jazzed about all the people that were watching, and didn't have time to do that downward negative spiral.
Just didn't have time to think about it. You just have to think about the next kilometer, the next turn.
Yeah, holding a guy's wheel.
Getting a bottle, buddy, yeah.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, you look at your Garmin and you're like, oh, I got 10K left in this race.
Well, tell me about the final 10K.
Final 10K was awesome. It was super cool. I managed to get in the break with Simon, and I call Simon the consummate professional. The guy is
Simon Clark. Yeah,
he is the consummate professional, almost to a fault sometimes, but he super, like, he was just exceptional as a teammate that day. Mm. And especially in those final K, because I've been in those situations alone, and you start panicking because guys start attacking. It was a big break. There's about 25 riders.
You end up doing way more work than you have to, and in hindsight you realize how you could have played it differently, but at that moment,
yeah. And it wasn't like a group of Pellegrinos, like, it was
like the house.
Yeah, so like normally when you're in a break like that, maybe there's one or two guys, so you're like, okay, I can focus on this guy. But there's Rafa Mica, De La Cruz, Valken Mollema.
These are all guys who can run a top 10 GC on their own day anyway. Yeah,
nimbly. So there's too many guys to like just focus on one person. And so what Simon did is he just started attacking. And by virtue of him attacking, it forced all those other guys, because Simon already won, so everyone knew Simon was fit. It forced all those other guys to follow.
Mm.
And
they forgot about you to a degree.
Yeah, and I could just chill, surf. And then when you're able to surf and kind of sit 10, 15 wheels back, you have perspective. And I was just sitting back there watching, and I could see who was not looking good, who was looking good. And it made a world of a difference going into the final climb, mm-hmm. because then I was like, okay, I know this guy's not going to be as sharp. This guy just made an effort in order to bridge across. And then I was able to just stay.
Follow the wheels.
Yeah, follow the wheels, save energy, and be a killer. And then when we got in the final climb, we went up, and it's a climb that was tailor made for me.
What is it? I can't remember the exact percentage. How long is it? What was the climb?
I couldn't tell you the details either.
It was like 6K or 4K?
Yeah, about 6K, but I operate really well on climbs that are inconsistent, like, so not a consistent, unless it's super consistently super steep, but like where I can kind of
effort recovery.
I think it's how I train, and also the style of rider I am, which is more of an Ardennes classics guy, where it's, you know, hard efforts up steep climbs. And this one just pitched, and then when recovery pitched,
and when it pitched, like, I mean, it pitched at like 20%, didn't it,
for 60. A while? Yeah,
like between 10 and 20%. Nothing, the pitches weren't below 10%.
Yeah. And then I just felt I had great legs. So I tried some digs and managed to really the only person who was responding well was Dylan Toons. And so then I just knew I had to focus on him for the rest of the climb, because Rafa Michael was good, but he was kind of going back a bit and not responding as fast. De La Cruz was really not responding to the kicks. He was just keeping his own pace. And with about 1.5K to go, De La Cruz attacked, but he's not a punchy guy, so I was able to just slot in right behind him, and he just held the pace. Dylan Toons got dropped, and that's when I knew I could win this thing. So there have been so many moments. I've had a lot of seconds now since I started with the team. Too many seconds. Second Liège, second at Milan Torino, Indurain. There's several, and I just haven't really closed the deal. Even the Giro this year. And in those moments, I was the dog that caught the squirrel. Like, I was feeling really good. I knew I could win, but I just didn't know. Like, I just dropped the ball. I cracked under the, like, in those final moments. I didn't execute well or did something wrong, made a mistake. And the ultimate result in me coming second.
There's a big difference between first and second. Like, I know that sounds really simple, but, like, psychologically there's a big difference. Like, it's like a big hurdle. Like, you can make mistakes, you can still ride strong, and you can get second, but to win, it's just,
especially when I first came into, because second was still a win for me.
Yeah, that's the thing, that's the mentality. Like, it's a change.
Like, you say, like, you're like, you know, I've never been in this position before, you know, a podium's still good, and it hurts just a bit less to go after that.
Yeah.
And you still get a result, and people still celebrate you for the second.
Totally.
And the other thing too is this: the level of the World Tour is so high, and it's a win at this level is so much harder, because you're trying to win against winners.
Mm.
I found winning on the domestic scene, so many guys were doing what I would do when I got to the World Tour. It would be seconds good enough.
Top five.
Yeah.
And they'll contend already when they're in that position.
Yeah, so you've won if you've transferred your mind to thinking, I can win at the domestic scene.
Yeah, but that's what you, now it's making that transition here.
Yeah. But the thing is, especially in this group that I was in, I had to win against winners that had won at that level.
Mm.
And mentally, those guys are ninjas. Like, they're far more stable. They don't make as many mistakes, because they when they smell blood, they go after it.
Yeah.
And
so take us back to where you were. You're, let's say now, a K to go.
Cruz was riding hard and dropped everybody, but then we had one of those respites, like one of those flat sections on the climb, and he elbowed me through, and I just thought, no, I'm not going to go through, because I can beat this guy if it comes down to a sprint. And that's when Toons and Rafa Micah came back on us, and we were four, and the road narrowed, and the fans were just going insane.
Yeah,
the Basque Country fans, as I said earlier, crazy. They started crowding the road. It was foggy, so you couldn't see what was next. I wasn't sure how far I had left to go. And then Rafa Micah attacked, and I was able to squeeze between a fan and De La Cruz and get on his wheel. And then Dylan Toons hit hard. And we were at that point maybe 600 meters to go, and he got maybe even 700, 650, and he got a gap on me. But I knew that if I brought him back and just it would be a huge effort, but if I caught him and just came over the top of him, it would destroy him, because I've done that before.
Yeah.
Where I've done the full gas effort and thought, okay, if I drop everybody now, it's smooth sailing, but if a guy comes back on me, that's it. My bluff's been called.
Yeah.
So I like doubled down. I did the double bluff and just came over the top of him as hard as I could. At that time though, because there were so many fans and because there's so much fog, I couldn't see how far I'd left. And I just assumed, because Toons went so hard, we only had maybe 200 meters left.
And this is at about, what, 20, 18% or something?
It was, yeah,
super steep.
Super steep. I came over top, dropped him, was like, yes, I'm going to win this thing.
I'm waiting for the finish line. Where is it?
Yeah. How am I going to sally?
Love bright.
And then I look up and see a sign, 500 meters. And think, oh my God, oh my God. So I sat back down, and tried to just keep pace. And then Juanma first came on the radio and said, he was so excited, and he said, 20 more seconds. I didn't believe, but I wanted to believe. Yeah. So like I counted in my head. I literally went 20, 19, 18, counted all the way down to one, looked up, and I couldn't even see the 300 meters sign to go. I was like, and I was hurting so bad, and I kept on looking back, and I couldn't really see tunes, so I thought, okay, I just got to keep pace. And then I started feeling him. I started looking back again and saw him coming up a bit. And that's when Juanma came on the radio and just said, do it for your family.
Yeah. That's when I could hear it in the radio too. Yeah.
Do it for your family, Mike. You're living the dream. Do it for your family. And I've told you this already. I've said this in interviews, but it was actually 2.5 months ago, my wife and I, when my wife was 37 weeks pregnant, and our son passed away, and it was really really tough for me, tough for my wife also. I've never really had a major loss in my life, and when I'd heard about stillbirths in the past, I didn't really feel like I didn't understand them. I didn't understand how I didn't think that someone would deal like that with
that.
That
as affected by it.
Yeah, but when it happened to us, it was as if anybody, like even, well, I loved him, and and even though I didn't know him, I talked to Ellie's belly every day, and just
he would have known you.
Yeah, and Ellie had this amazing attachment with him too. She knew he was a boy before the doctors did. She knew something was wrong and felt something off before the doctors did, and yeah, we felt like we had this amazing relationship with him, and he died, and Ellie gave birth, and yeah, 37 weeks. He was a fully formed baby dude.
Holy shit.
And we held him, and yeah, it was we cremated him, spread him in this beautiful place in the Gatineau Park, which is a park close to where I live, in a spot where a lot of people will go by cross country skiing or mountain biking and hiking, and yeah, like. Just we love him, and we still do. I think about him every day. So when Juanma said
that puts the weight on this comment now.
Do it for your family.
Those thoughts in a microsecond go through your head, and you're like,
yeah, dude, I held on.
You're like, gear down.
I don't know if I would have been able to hold on for that last 300 years.
And like, that's for me. I didn't know the extent of that story you just said now, but I've got my own stories too, and that comment, it rattled right through my body. As I was riding up, I was just like, I wanted to attack because I wanted to do it for, and that's something that makes me lift another level. There's not many things, but my family, and not saying I have that situation, but we've all got our own little things.
For me, actually, it was one thing. I was not as empathetic before this, and I didn't understand grief as much before. And it did change that for me. Like, I realize now that, yeah, we do, like, so many people do have those little things.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it was a powerful, powerful thing that Juanma said.
And had to use it sparingly.
Yeah, it's not like he's used this every day. It's not like, Mike, get in the break. Do it for your family. You know, like, yeah. It was time.
It was, and he used it only in that last moment. There was plenty of times up that climb he could have called it.
Yeah. He said 40K into the stage when he figured I was in the break. He's like, you know what? He told this to Louise, I have the line. I'm going to use it.
Crazy.
That's how it also shows how great of a director he is. But also, too, Juanma has been my director, personal director, since I joined the team.
And that's the thing, you got that personal connection. It couldn't have come from anyone else.
No, we talk on a regular basis, maybe at least twice a month over the phone, just checking up on how we're doing. But then we talked a lot more after Hunter passed away. Hunter was the name of my son. after Hunter passed away, we talked even more. And Juanma's a guy, too, who's also a really experienced cyclist, but a guy who's had to overcome a lot of obstacles as well. And he's very empathetic in that sense. He didn't have it easy as a rider. Didn't have it easy as a kid. And so it even gave it more weight, too, just because he's been through hard times.
Came from a place of care.
Yeah.
Trust.
Yeah. And Tunes was coming back on me, but when I heard that, he wasn't.
Well, what did you think of that one? Woodsy. He's got a good story and he tells a good story too. I'm definitely going to have to get him back on the podcast this year. Just fine. I'm sure he's going to do something crazy or even just talk to him about some ice hockey back in Canada, I'm sure. Well, I love hearing all these little mini episodes again. It's just making me refreshed of the old stuff I've done. And if you haven't heard them before, I hope you're really enjoying them. And I hope I can keep bringing you some good stuff like these episodes you're hearing now. Coming up will be the official Jimmy Whelan release on the 29th of January. So hang in there for that. I want to say thanks again to the Cycling Podcast for helping me produce this. And for helping me produce all the episodes coming this year. And of course, Lara behind the scenes at Life in the Peloton too. So until the next episode, guys, cheers. You have been listening to Life in the Peloton. The producer of this episode was Will Jones. The music in this episode was composed by Pete Shelley. Thanks, mate.